Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
Good, I'm happy to be back.
I'm so glad you're back because you're out here, as always, crushing it. I love it. Just crushing it, taking names. I love like the attitude and the confidence that you bring to your training. It really is. It gets me so excited. Every time I
Thank
see a new Instagram story pop up, I'm like, all right, here we go. Game time. So I get so excited for it, and you've been out here racing too. I guess generally speaking, how's everything going?
Pretty good. I just ended the season with the Track Shack series. And pretty much am taking a little bit of downtime right now just to kind of figure out what I want to do. I had some plans to race a summer marathon, but those plans kind of changed. But I knew that my plans would kind of be changing throughout this time period anyway. So, yeah.
All right, let's talk about Track Shack. So, I know we talked about this a little bit in the first episode because we just talked about like the trials being in Orlando, what that meant for you, its relation, the relationship it had with the local running scene. I know Track Shack is kind of everywhere down in your neck of the woods, just from a racing perspective. But if people aren't familiar with the Orlando running scene, just give people a primer of what Track Shack is and what you've been up to in regards to what they're doing from a racing perspective.
So, yeah, Track Shack is a running store based in Orlando, and they host a lot of the running events that happen here in Orlando from every distance, from the 5K all the way up to the half marathon. And they also host a lot of community training programs, primarily for the 10K or 5K to 10K range. And they do a little bit in the half marathon as well. So that's a little bit about them. They also, apparently, they own the timing system for like major races, including I believe the Olympics as well. They're really deeply embedded in the running community, not just in Orlando, but nationwide. So yeah, they had a kind of like an initiative throughout the series with Advent Health to kind of bring people to their races. And they sponsored me this season.
Oh, there you
I got
go.
a
Right.
lot of
And
perks.
it seems like they have kind of a connection to Orlando in Orlando getting the Olympic trials nod in a similar way that like the Atlanta Track Club had a connection with Atlanta and getting in the them getting chosen back in 2020. That might be an oversimplification, but is that somewhat true?
So actually, that part, I'm not quite aware. I mean, I know that I'm very familiar with the owners at Track Shack. Like, I know them. I know their son as well, but I don't know exactly the weeds and the details of how exactly they got that connection with the Olympics.
Gotcha. All right. I don't know where I'd heard that or whatever, but I knew that, again, Track Shack is being a big part of what's going on down there. So in addition to them having these races and a race series of sorts, what was your involvement with them just like from a sponsorship perspective?
Yeah, so I got financial support and I also got my races covered through them. And so that was kind of, and they just wanted to follow my story. And so they took pictures and some video at some of the events, just kind of detailing, I guess, essentially my running journey throughout that season. And so that was what my little sponsorship thing was all about. And yeah, the initiative was just to kind of like get people motivated to get healthy and get out there and get to the races and just be, part of the community.
So what was that like, having them following you around and all of that? Because I know you've been running their races for such a long time.
Was very nerve-wracking. And, every race that had come up, I was like, I just got to make it to this race. I just got to make it to this race. Because the series, doing it alone, just even when you're just solely training for that, is very, it's difficult. It's hard on your body because you're running a 5K or 10K pretty much once every, sometimes 4 weeks, about every 8 weeks sometimes. So from August all the way until March. And so you come to these races and obviously, the expectation for me was to place or at least perform very well. And so the pressure was on, not just because of that, but also I was training for two marathons while doing this and had several half marathons in between. So I wasn't just trying to do well in the series, I was trying to do well in those distances as well. So that was wow. Like, this is an incredible accomplishment for me.
And you're not someone who shies away from competitive situations. Like, it seems like you really, competitive situations seem to draw the most out of you. So to hear you kind of describe it this way obviously proves that, you know, there was a lot there. Because you're not someone who would kind of, it doesn't seem like you're the kind of person that would be like, oh yeah, this was a lot kind of feel to it. You seem to embrace when things are a lot.
Well, yeah, my first initial thought was, I can't take this because I'm gonna, blow it. I'm gonna ruin it. And I'm gonna make an ass out of myself. But, part of me is also drawn to situations like that because I like getting my ass kicked. So I was a little bit torn, I was a little scared, but I went for it anyways, and I'm glad that it went well in the end. Like, I didn't have to drop out of the series or anything like that.
So how many races in total?
Okay, there is the Running of Celebration 5K, then a Battle of the Bands 5K, You Can Finish 5 Miler, Park Avenue 5K, Run for Love 4 Miler, and then it finishes with a 10K in March, so 6 different races. And then there's a half marathon in between that's not considered part of the series, but I did that as well.
Gotcha. And one thing I did notice, because I was following along, and I turns out I follow many of the people who do very well in those races. A lot of them have been on the Rambling Runner podcast, actually, how it turns out. But it seems like I was pretty familiar with most of the people on every one of those podiums. So how does that play into it? I mean, it's like not only are these races, you know, competitive and they go in the mixed marathon training, and you have some a little bit of peer pressure or just inherent pressure just because they're supposed to sponsoring you. So obviously they're expecting you to do pretty well, but you're also running against people that are really good that you also know pretty well. So what's that element like?
My first thought when I came in third was, oh, well, I would have wanted to come in first, but obviously this is my first time placing so well in the series point blank period. And then not to mention that I came in third behind Erica Weitz, who is a former collegiate runner and Olympic trials qualifier. And then the second place girl is, she's forever 10 years old in my mind. If you listen to the first episode of Rambling Runner, I got my butt kicked by her. And I was like, man, this 10-year-old kicked my ass. She's still kicking it 3 years later. And she's on a national level as far as her competitiveness and running. And so to come in behind those two girls, it's just incredible. Like, I would have never imagined myself coming this far.
And then, so she's like a freshman or sophomore in high school?
I think she's 12 now, I think, or
Oh, so
13.
she was literally 10. I
She
thought you
was
were just
literally
like
10.
saying that for effect.
No, she's literally 10, and she's still 10 in my mind. When I see her, I'm like, oh, she's so cute and little. But she is a force to be reckoned with. And yeah, she's competitive on the national level. I think she's like one of the top in the nation right now for her age. So yeah, to
Gotcha.
get my ass kicked by both of them, like, I have no problem with that. It's awesome. So.
That's interesting. All right. So during this time, again, you're running all of these races and you're running incredibly well too, right? So besides just all of this, let's just talk about your performances. Like, especially recently, I know you had the most recent race just finished up. How do you feel like you're coming along as an athlete, not only in your training, but also from a racing perspective?
Well, in my mind, as well as I do, like, I always just want to be a little bit better, so I do struggle with that. But then when I kind of draw back things back into perspective, seeing where I came from and where I'm at now, I don't have words for it. When I first started racing at Track Shack, I couldn't even break 30 minutes in the 5K. So, and that took me many, many years to even get to the level where I could do run a 28-minute 5K. And I was so happy, I was in tears. And so to be where I'm at now, in the series and my running, is just unreal. And even going back to the marathon performance, I really wanted 2:45 or better to run just 2 minutes off of the previous Olympic trials qualifying time. I can't believe it. I think back to where I started and how If people would have seen me back then, back in 2014, and I said, hey, I wanted to, even if I said I wanted a boss and qualify, I feel like I would have gotten laughed off the face of the earth, much less to say, hey, I want to run in the 240s. So, part of me always feels like, oh, I need to do better, but at the same time, I can't be that mad about where I'm at.
So let's talk about your most recent race. Like let's break that down just in terms of like what was the distance, what was the time, the pacing for it, and how you approached it from a competitive perspective. Like, was it a time trial, or were you looking at it like, no, these are the people I'm racing, and I'm going to go out there and race them from a competitive perspective as opposed to time trialing, or maybe it was the other way around?
Well, one thing that's nice about doing the series, not as my primary, I guess you could say that it wasn't my primary focus, was that I could kind of go sit back and think, okay, this is kind of like a long run, fast workout. But obviously, I am racing and I do want to do really well. I do want to place first, like coming in third. I'm getting more and more and more competitive, and I would have never seen myself having the audacity to say, oh, well, I want to come out here and I want to be first. But I will say that, yeah, I mean, I lost my train of thought, but anyways.
You got it. So I was basically asking you, like, talk to me about like how you approached the race from a competitive perspective, whether it was a time trial situation or if you went in there like, all right, these are the people I'm racing. I know the people in this race, and I'm just gonna kind of figure it out. Also, and how you felt about how you ran.
I will say, yeah, that things did change for me throughout the season. So when my focus was the marathon, I was able to lean back and just be like, hey, this isn't as serious, but I'm gonna run my butt off and I'm gonna try my hardest. But when things kind of shifted and the marathons were over, my priorities also shifted in how I was gonna run the race. And funny enough, the one where I put the most pressure on myself, which was the 10K, the final one. That was the one where I raced the worst. So that was kind of surprising. I don't know if it was like physical, mental. There were a couple things that led up to it that lead me to believe that it was probably a little bit more of like a physical thing. Like I got my period the night before the race, and I was just like laid out in bed the whole day. And I was just like, no, this is not the way it's gonna go down, because typically, I race very well on my period, so that hasn't been an issue for me. And I was like, please, God, please don't let it be an issue. But the next day, I just kind of felt like sluggish. So yeah, my priorities did change throughout the season. But I will say that even like with the Parc Ave 5K, where I ran my best 5K time, and I just kind of did it as a little bit of a time trial because it was 6 days after Houston. So there was no choice. I had no training leading up to this, and I was just going to go out there and let it rip. But yeah, I did really well when the pressure was low. And so it just really depended on where I was within that when that race came. Was I in between a marathon or not? That kind of changed the way that I approached it. But I knew that no matter what, and especially for the 5K and the 10K, that I wasn't there just to place. I was going to run my ass off and go for a time. So
So when you said that you ran the worst in the 10K, is that in relation to like, all right, this is what my fitness is, so I expect to run a certain time? Is it compared to the people that you were running against? Like maybe some people beat you who hadn't beaten you in the past. Like how would you quantify like what you mean by like you ran the worst?
man, it was the worst in every way humanly possible. Like, I had trained better leading up to this. Not better, but I had some really killer workouts where, I ran, I think it was most of my paces during my interval training were indicative that I was in shape to hit this 5:45 pace to 5:48. That's kind of what I was ranging for, and I ended up running like a 6:07, which is, or 6:08, which is like a second minute per mile off of my half marathon PR. So that was very shocking how bad it was. And I knew when I was running, like after the first mile, I hit 5:45. I was just like, I'm not gonna look at my watch. I'm just gonna keep running as hard as I can and just believe that I can continue to somehow pick people off. But not just from the training perspective, but also when I showed up to the race, I just felt mentally, sometimes I'm there and I just know I'm, this sounds horrible, but I'm ready to start beheading people. I'm ready to start killing. And then this day,
this is great. I think that competitive spirit is like an important thing to talk about. Obviously, like, you're a very caring and like intelligent woman, but at the same time, like, having a competitive spirit, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, I was there. Yeah. I feel so terrible because, like, if I do end up beating someone, then they're going to think, like, oh man, she was after my head. But, like, yeah, I kind of was. But then after the race, like,
it's a race.
Friends. Yeah.
So I love that. And I love how, like, in the past, you, like, you also don't go out, you go out of your way not to, like, hide these things, which I think is great, you know, like, hearing your honest perspective of this. But I think it's also part and parcel with why you've become so much better over the last 5 years, is that you are competitive, you know? Yeah. And, like, I think we can't dissociate those things.
Yeah, and I will say that at first, when I first started running and trying to gain some speed, a lot of it was focused around, like, oh, let me, and it still is, around me being my best self and getting the most out of myself. But any moment that someone would try and spar with me, I would just fold like a lawn chair and would just give up and be like, I can't do this, I'm scared. Now I'm like, okay, come on, bring it, let's go, let's dance. And so I'm ready, and I don't know, for the Winter Park 10K, like, I just didn't come there with that energy. I just kind of felt like, oh, let me just get this over with. It's the last race of the season. And it's kind of weird because I felt like this was also a race that I had more mentally prepared for than any of the other races within the series as well. So it's kind of like the more that I put into it, the least I got out of it, which was kind of strange.
Right. Well, you also were in a unique situation for you, but at the same time, one that's not unique to people generally, and certainly over the course of like a 3 to 5 year period, where all of a sudden you are in a race, things aren't going the way you want them to. And not like because like you had like oversized ambitions or you didn't quite know your fitness level. Like, you knew what your fitness level was. You knew what you're capable of. You're running against people that you've run against many times, and just things aren't going objectively the way that they could have gone for you. Now, that is a situation that presents a lot of options. How do you handle that situation? So let's talk about this in terms of, you know, what you did in that situation where all of a sudden, like, it's now crystal clear, things aren't going the way you intended. You put a lot into this. Again, there's a lot of people can go in a lot of different directions at that point. Their monologue can go a lot of different ways. Maybe they, you know, cut it short. Maybe they don't give the kind of effort they want. Maybe they can vacillate back and forth. Talk to me about the inner game that happened at that point in the race for you, and then also your reflections and how you handled it.
So I will say the first thing I started to tell myself was, oh, I'm happy with where I'm at. But I think to say that would not be completely true. I think the right verbiage would say I was at peace with where I was at in that day.
And like, so, acceptance.
Yeah, I was just like, this is what I have today, and I'm going to keep putting my best foot forward. And my mantra that day was just believe that I can keep going. And that, like I said earlier, you know, just continue to pick people off and do my best, because, you know, there's a lot of people, they'll tell themselves, oh, it's not my day. And yeah, there is a kernel of truth in that you can have a day that's just, it's not going the way that you envisioned it. But I do think that every day that you get out there and you try, you put your best foot forward, whether it looks the way that you expected it or not, that is your day. It's just maybe not the day that you wanted, but it is your day because you're out there and you're at least, you know, giving that effort, and it's stacking on top of another effort and another effort until you're basically, you know, you've got this two sticks rubbing for so long that eventually you start to see some smoke and some fire. And so I was like, okay, well, this isn't going to be the race, but that doesn't mean that my time isn't coming.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about moving forward, because you did hint at how things are changing. You said matter-of-factly at the beginning of the conversation. So talk to us about what maybe the plans were originally and how things are shifting and why.
So, the plan was to jump into another summer marathon. And after getting my hotel and all of my stuff situated with grandma's, I just wasn't happy with the cost. And then there's just a lot that I'm trying to navigate in this short window of time, as it's getting closer to the end of the year. And so I'm having to think very strategically about, okay, how am I going to place maybe one or two marathons apart? Should I go for two attempts, or will that mentally kind of throw me off where I might leave something in the tank on the first attempt, knowing that there's a second attempt coming? So right now, what my coach and I are thinking is to just give it one shot in the fall, but potentially like sign up for two races. So that way, if the weather is a little bit wacky, I can just drop from that race and then go find another one that I can, or have another one lined up that it's going to have a better opportunity. So basically, if it ends up raining cats and dogs again at Indy, it will be a no-go.
People don't remember, Monumental this year was a windy, rainy disaster for people who had time goals.
Yeah. So tentatively, the goal right now is to just give it one really good shot and see if I can make it. And it's stressful because it's not like I'm running a 3:15 and I'm like, oh, I want to make the trials by the end of the year. Like, I'm kind of in an awkward place where it's like, okay, it could happen, but it also might not. And so I'm trying to strategically place things, and you know, you just don't know the outcome. And so that's kind of the tightrope that I'm walking right now.
For sure. And at the same time, we've seen people, like I'm just going back 3 years to a lot of people who ran CIM and then ran Houston, right? So they were roughly 7 weeks apart. So you have people who gave max effort in both races. You know, Peter Bromka historically is one of the obvious examples that people know, not only because he's been on my show talking about it plenty of times, he's written about it, and he actually did a Road to the Trials episode even back then about that process. So when you even see that, is that something that potentially could fall in the mix where you're like, from a scheduling perspective, see, okay, we'll sign up for CIM, right? So that's like the last race of the window is California National Marathon. And then you just kind of like start from the end in mind and go, okay, what's 6 to 8 weeks before CIM that might also be a good fit? Or how do you even think about the scheduling perspective?
Yeah, that's basically how we're thinking about doing it, is setting things about anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks apart to give myself that really good chance if something does happen. I mean, that's the way I want to do it. But yeah, and I know there's pressure because, like you mentioned, you know, there's people from Indy who went to Houston, and now there's all these people who didn't make it at Houston who are now jumping into Grandma's, and there's going to be a percentage of those people who don't make it at Grandma's, so they're going to jump into another race. And so I feel like I have to move very quickly and figure out exactly where I'm going right away, because the more time that I wait, the more these people that are kind of filtering through and not making it are going to jump to the next race.
All right, let me ask you about how you perceive this as pressure, right? Because, you know, this is like a stretch goal for you, something that is potentially within the realm of possibility, but at the same time, it's not like someone who's a 239 marathoner hoping to get down below 237, right? Mm-hmm. This is a more of a stretch goal. This is why you're on the show, to detail this journey. When you say that you feel pressure here, can you explain like the pressure you feel and why you feel pressure in this situation?
I guess it's just mostly around all the could-be's and what-ifs. Like, what if this works out? What if this race ends up, you know, with crappy weather? So that's kind of, you know, just picking that one race and committing to it is the scariest part. And I think that's a scary thing for a lot of people. It's just picking something and just thinking, okay, this is what it's going to be. This is what I'm committing to. And I'm going to make it work no matter what. And so I have a lot of fear and anxiety around all the what ifs around that situation. And so that's kind of what's primarily fueling it. You know, as far as making this time within the deadline is something that I more set up for myself just to have a goal that I'm like, objectively, this is what I want to get to and put the fire up under my butt to get working at it, instead of just putting this vague goal in my mind of, oh, I want to get fit or run fast, because what does that even mean? But yeah, as far as making it or not making it, there is pressure around that, but it's not my ultimate goal. I do think that if, because I'm so new to this and I'm just starting this journey and I am where I'm at, I have a little thought in the back of my mind that tells me, like, I could potentially go further than just qualifying for the trials. So yeah, you know, it'll sting if I don't make it, but because I did put that goal out there, but it's not the ultimate goal. And I do plan on continuing after this and trying to go even faster.
Right. And you have time too, right? I mean, this isn't a situation where you have somebody who maybe is in like their mid to late 40s who's going to potentially like age out of a window.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's not your situation. Right. Again, there's nothing against masters runners. I am masters runners, but like, obviously, you know, age plays a factor ultimately in some of our athletic pursuits. And say, I'm just giving an example, right? Say someone who is 48 years old, who's like on the cusp. It's like, oh, I can't just bank on the next window. Like I'm going to be 52 at the next window. Right.
Right.
So you have situations where you can imagine someone falling into that situation. That is not your situation.
Yeah. And I mean, there are no guarantees in life. You know, anything could happen. Like next year, something could happen where I don't end up, and not like a pregnancy or something like that, but I don't know, something in my life could happen that disrupts my training, and this might be my last window. But, you know, I do think that that's part of living fully and living an exciting life, is chasing something that you're not sure if you're going to get it. And there's also a lot of heartbreak in that too. You know, I was reading the last chapter recently of David Goggins' book Can't Hurt Me, and he was talking about sitting in a dungeon picking up the shattered pieces of his dream. And so obviously, you know, no one wants to be there doing that, but I do think that there's a lot of excitement. And so yeah, that's kind of primarily what I'm going after with the you know, I guess the, I can't think of the word, but basically the possibility of me failing.
Well, Jeremy, again, thank you so much for your honesty, your candor, and talking us through all of this. We'll catch up again in like 5 or 6 weeks in the beginning of May, post-Boston. So we're going to be doing a Boston run-up, then we'll do a post-Boston stuff. You're not running Boston, but then once the Boston hullabaloo subsides, we'll get you back on the show and see how things are going.
Cool. Awesome. Well, it's been fun.